And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already tonight. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, we got the special report tonight.
Yes.
And this is all about the Trump indictment and the incredible witch hunt after President Trump, which has now gone to extremes we've never seen in this country. And so we are watching something which we should never have to see, really. But it's the kind of deep state phase that we're in. What I'm going to try to do tonight is go over some of the events from today and then just give you that arc, behind the scenes deep state arc of what they've been after in relation to President Trump and some of the answers that go a lot deeper than the headlines in relation to this. Of course, Trump, you know, it's amazing, even for those who oppose Trump, he energizes the entire political process in a way that Joe, who's, you know, kind of eaten off into the coffin there, ratings tank and all kinds of things happen. But the Biden administration has been a particularly dangerous administration when it comes to freedom, human rights, and nuclear proliferation, World War III, things of this nature. So we're in a very dangerous situation. And President Trump's return as the candidate of choice for the Republicans, now leading with 36 points in the polls, represents a things on a totally different scale. So we're going to get into that tonight and why they see him as such a threat. And, you know, there's been this, I don't know, I guess it's a kind of a theme that's been going along out there that actually the Democrats want to face Trump. And, you know, no, not by a long shot. Trump right now is leading in traditional polls that favor Democrats. He's leading Biden by 6 points. And after all this mess, probably by more. So we've got a lot there to really unpack and get a handle on. We're going to do that tonight. We'll take a few of your questions tonight. It's going to be kind of a short report. I just wanted to make sure we're on top of this. And we'll be here with you till about 10:30, if that sounds about right.
Sounds good.
And so we will take a few questions you can ask Miss Olivia. She'll put those together at the end. And how's it going out there?
Going great. Moments Divine says it's a sad, sad day for America.
It is, and it's for a lot of reasons, starting really with all the investigations into President Trump during his first term and all the Russian collusion and how the CIA, with the help from, you know, the regular folks like the FBI and the Clintons and people of this ilk who have been profiting so heavily from the war state. And, you know, Trump came in with a different vision around these things and, in fact, didn't get us into any new wars, which is a big deal when you think about it. You know, Obama, when he left, was bombing 7 countries. Think about that. This guy was supposed to be the peace candidate after Bush, right? So, you know, there's a lot of problems there in terms of perception. And what they wanted to hoist on us was a real war hawk in Hillary Clinton to fulfill the kind of Clinton crime syndicate. And they wanted to push into the whole Ukraine-Russia problem, and they wanted to alienate Russia. And this is part of the neocons moving into that side of the aisle, you know, after, you know, a lot on the Republican side. It's interesting because the Republicans, their core audience still has an incredible dedication to the Constitution. So this is a problem when you get into what's been going on the left. They've been taking that entire Democratic Party outside of the realm of the Constitution, and they've been moving the neocon and the fascist line into the Democrats' sphere, using a lot of social issues to entice them in. So a lot of the regular Democrats, and you know, you see this all the time from people like Naomi Wolf, who used to run, you know, she ran Clinton Gore and the Gore presidential election in 2000. So she knew all about that crowd. And she felt alienated. She felt like she was in Nazi Germany. So, you know, we see it over and over again. And we've seen this outpouring and the incredible censorship. They want to reboot the censorship for 2024. And I'll tell you, it's extremely unpopular. So we have a real problem here. And one of the things I think that this deep state arc is building up to is they want something like a false flag style operation in order to roll out things like the domestic terror bill, and so that they can say, oh, you know, presidential candidates who say incendiary things, you know, they can't run for president. So they've been looking more specifically to President Trump's campaign for re-election, and really, I think, worried, deep down worried, because they were able to pull off a lot of shenanigans in 2020 with COVID and everything else. They could rely heavily on all sort of voting magician's tricks that you didn't see in previous times. There's always been, by the way, a certain amount of chicanery going on in the voting system. And that's how we got people like Lyndon Johnson into the Senate, by the way, in the first place. So there's some very famous examples of that through history. All historians know it. So there's that. The problem with 2020 in the Trump election is that he was leading by such a heavy margin, and the Biden campaign wasn't doing any campaigning. So you just, you know, you don't win like that. And if it were in fact true that you could win like that, nobody would campaign. Because if you can just sit at home or occasionally go out and do, like, you know, stand on a crate in a drive-in with 25 people, well, then you don't need to do all this campaign expenditure. So just forget about it. So you can see there were too many elements involved there. But even beyond all that, regardless of where you stand on the voting issues, the intense, and I mean intense, targeting of President Trump is something that needs to be looked at and understood in a very deep political context. And we know deep politics takes us into the work of Professor Peter Dale Scott, who observed immediately, and again, you know, being a left coast professor, he was no fan of Trump, but he observed immediately that this deep state was all hands on deck to get President Trump. And this is interesting because in his work, and, you know, he's the professor that we cite on this program a lot because his work is such a foundation of how we understand the American deep state. But remember, he coined the term the deep state and deep politics. He was writing about deep politics in the 80s and deep events, things like Iran-Contra, 9/11. You know, that is where a group deep inside moves into the public sphere long enough to change the policy and then retreats back behind the scenes. So those deep events we've seen over and over again, dating from the presidential assassination of President Kennedy. Now, it's interesting because this same day that they arraigned President Trump is the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And Martin Luther King, it's the same type of thing where he's standing against this power machine. What they were doing at the time were, you know, not only consolidating minority groups, but, and, you know, fearing that those groups would rise up, but they were really hell-bent on the Vietnam War, and they could not afford to have his kind of peaceful opposition going on. And he had changed a lot of his own campaigning in the public realm, was moving from, you know, just lifting people up to let's, you know, challenge this Vietnam War situation. And so 55 years ago, he was assassinated, but the person that he behind the scenes was supporting for president was Robert F. Kennedy, who was the brother of the slain president, John F. Kennedy. And this all kind of plays out in a very interesting pattern. If we take a snapshot now, here we are some 55 years later after the assassination of both Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and we find ourselves faced with the very same group in charge that eliminated those leaders and that is moving again to the brink of war in these situations around the globe. So I think that there's a necessity in kind of the human psyche in America in particular, because we're spawning so much of this, but around the world, the awakening is so important that we get a handle on this and see who is behind these activities. And to see the group that is persecuting President Trump is to get a real glimpse into the eyes of the group that is perpetrating all this chaos around the globe. So what we were watching today was part of their pageantry, part of their circus, because when, you know, just on the technical side, when the actual charges came out against Trump, there was nothing there. They did 34 counts around the same count relating to hush money paid to a porn star about an affair from, you know, over 7 years ago. And when the DA came out, everyone thought he must have something new because the federal authorities looked at this case already and decided we're not going to do anything with it. And then his own office looked at it and said, we're not going to do anything with it. There's nothing to prosecute here. This happens all the time. And there's all kinds of, you know, cases where they have the people agree to a non-disclosure agreement and somebody doesn't go public with a book or whatever it happens to be. So that stuff happens all the time. And so they try to thread the needle with this at a point where they were desperate to get Trump. And they've just kept it after the fact. You know, they've kept this in their back pocket. Well, here they are rolling into 2023 and Trump's numbers are rising and Biden is looking terrible after his disastrous run on the world stage for 2 years, almost 2.5 years of declining economy. And, you know, now we have bank runs and he's brought us to the brink of nuclear war. It was a disastrous exit from Afghanistan where we left $80 billion worth of advanced arms for the Taliban, you know, just the kind of stuff that would basically destroy any presidency. But they've been holding on there in the background. And I think that they're in the back of their minds, they were thinking, you know, no matter how out of it Stepford Biden is, we could still push him across the finish line. And since it's a committee, in fact, that's running him behind the scenes, they really don't care who the individual is. Maybe the more brainless, the better. I mean, look at Fetterman, right? Mm. So we get into this kind of scenario. Then we look at the charges that they're laying out and this gambit that they've been running on Trump since he entered politics, really. But when you look at that arc from when there was the raid at Mar-a-Lago around the classified documents, then you start to see the territory that we're getting into. It's a little bit unusual because, first of all, the raid was unprecedented. If you thought the indictment and arrest of a president was unprecedented, you're correct. And we've had people who were candidates for being arrested, from President Clinton with his obvious lying in court and lying to Congress and everything else, to the, you know, really remarkable cases going all the way back to Nixon and everything else. So, you know, if you've wanted that kind of stuff, it's been there. You know, President Bush, George W. Bush. Hello, President George W. Bush, illegal war in Iraq. So, you know, those types of things have been there, and you could always make some kind of a case against anybody. What's unusual about this is a state prosecutor going after a presidential, leading presidential candidate who formerly was president. This is very strange, and it opens a Pandora's box of just incredible chaos and, you know, all the warnings about this side mobilizing and that side mobilizing and all the things that you hear about George Soros in the background sort of grooming these prosecutors the way the World Economic Forum grooms these leaders around the world, you know, like Justin Trudeau and some of the real terrible people that we have leading, you know, then these things become a lot more obvious. So you see, oh, this isn't something that somebody made up. This is actually happening. And once we get that clear in our own minds, we get a better picture of what's on the board. Let's look at what is going on there in relation to President Trump. And I'm going to draw the arc all the way back to a comment by Professor Scott that I mentioned. And what's interesting, this is how we need to understand this. There's been a lot of confusion about what the deep state is. And I've heard this in even kind of erudite political discussions. They don't seem to know what it is, who coined it, what it represents. And they seem to think of it rather foolishly as just, you know, a group of people in government who hang out there too long, you know, and functionaries in government. It has nothing to do with that, in fact. So here's from Professor Scott's book, which is called The First Deep State Revolt Against the Presidency, referring to the Kennedy assassination. Beneath the orderly facade of American government, there lies a complex network, only partly structural, linking Wall Street influence, corrupt bureaucracy, and the military-industrial complex. Here lies the true power of the American empire. This behind-the-scenes web is unelected, unaccountable, and immune to popular resistance. So the four levels of that deep state, in fact, consist of organized crime on one level. And then the next level up, you have the intel groups like the Central Intelligence Agency and others like the NSA and so on. The level beyond that is the groups that the CIA and others use to contract, Booz Allen Hamilton and others. And those people are even less subject to the kind of oversight that a group that's operating outside of the government is. As lawless as the CIA is, the CIA contractors are even more lawless. And you're going to find so much of this boils down to the Central Intelligence Agency. And the next level is all of the financial powers, that whole international finance wing that the CIA supports. Those tentacles around the world, including the oil companies and the energy companies, the tech companies, this whole thing moves. And, that's Professor Scott's deep state. The only thing that I would say I've discovered in the middle of it is that there's an aerospace aspect on that intelligence / military / corporate side that's operating and slithering around in all three and shows up over and over again in the middle of all that. So that aerospace wing is something I think it's largely overlooked. And so when we get to Lockheed Martin, we get to Boeing, we start to see that whole piece with the UFO file, which is, I think, extremely important if we're going to consider this properly in understanding what it is. And I have some articles that I'm going to cite tonight that'll help us to understand how the National Defense Authorization Act is being hooked up with this exotic technology piece. It has to be looked at that way. That way the CIA can't run away with the whole UFO technology aspect, the narrative about how they're going to save the day. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special. This is all about the Trump indictment. I'm going to give some real background here on what they're doing, because the face of it with Bragg and Stormy Daniels and all that stuff is a really bad facade for something else, which is, I'm going to kind of call it Project Overwhelm. They're going to try to overwhelm the reelection prospects of President Trump by launching case after frivolous case after frivolous case and exhausting his legal and political resources. This is what I think they're hoping to do, and swing that kind of sort of Damocles over his whole existence. Now, there's a lot of things, politically, where we can look at President Trump and say, he did some really great things when he was in office. One of them was erecting a genuine border against the invasion on our southern border, which I think is dramatic. And the lack of attention to it on the media cycles and in the Democratic Party is absurd, because when you have millions of people swarming into your country, that's the biggest emergency alert you could have. If you want to talk about, spreading disease and all that kind of stuff, like they did during the pandemic, wear a mask and, keep 6 feet away and all that nonsense. What do you think having millions of people coming across the border is about? If you want to talk about terrorism, if you want to talk about drug running, if you want to talk about crime, it's all in that. So the fact that Trump acknowledged that, I think, is powerful and is one of these core pieces with the Trump administration, where he's operating with a totally different group than's operating the deep state. This has to be looked at in a particular way, because it's not just, he's America first and he doesn't like Latinos or something ridiculous like that. Because in fact, if you go and look at those groups under President Trump's leadership, all those groups, the minority groups, did much better in terms of employment, financial status, and in other ways while he was president. So we're looking at a weird crisscross with one group trying to put down another group and, wave all these racist flags and things like that. But what is actually the truth on the ground after all? I mean, do you think that people who are Latinos who live here want to be overrun by illegal Latinos coming in? I don't think so. So it's all about, you know, making a balance around these situations and getting it right. But that one's important. And I also think the control around the border destroyed a lot of the things that the intel groups wanted to do, because a lot of that smuggling, the fentanyl and all the drug running that we see from the Central Intelligence Agency goes out the window if you have an actual manned border going on there. And what we're going to find out when we look at so many of these issues is the Central Intelligence Agency over and over again shows up as the main culprit. But it's who the Central Intelligence Agency is connected to in this deep state process that's going to really give us some answers. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. This is the indictment of President Trump, the incredible, illegal and unjust piece around the prosecuting a leading presidential candidate, former president, under these circumstances, with his actual, you know, enemies doing the prosecuting, is just beyond any normal reasoning functioning democracy. And if we were looking at it in another country, we'd call it what it is, fascism, right? So, but here it gets all these fancy names. But what's interesting is when we look at somebody like a state prosecutor, even in Manhattan, you know, this borough that controls so much of the world, and we're right there looking at these individual charges, we have to take a look at what's motivating that as well, and why they need to double down on both the state and a federal level. And when we get Smith and his special prosecutorial powers, what is he looking into? What is he going after? Well, he's trying to play J6 and the classified docs and come up with something, some kind of Frankenstein. So basically, you know, it's a get Trump setup, and we need to understand why and what's behind this. Now, it was interesting because Judge Napolitano, who I cite on this show on an occasion, he said some interesting things today in relation to the election, but things that he'd been hearing. And one of the things that he'd heard, and I'm sure you'll find this interesting, Miss Olivia, is that Hillary Clinton was the one who was driving the prosecution in New York. Now, this might seem odd on the face of it, but let's go into his explanation. Here's how he explained it. And he said he was hearing it from Democrats who were, you know, kind of disgruntled around Hillary. And so there was a weird slip of the tongue that came up today. It was when Pelosi was doing this, you know, meeting, this roundtable thing with Hillary. And it was like, how does it feel to be a hero and a leader? Are you more of a hero or more of a leader? So accidentally, supposedly, she referred to Hillary Clinton as president. And this was interesting for a couple of reasons, because on the heels of what Napolitano said that what was in the works was that they were going to appoint Kamala to a federal judgeship, and they were going to replace her with Hillary Clinton as Biden's VP. And then midway through the campaign, Biden was going to resign for health reason, and Hillary was supposed to be the one who will take it, you know, take the war to Russia, you know, this whole thing, crack down with the domestic terrorism while Joe goes to the old folks home. Now, I find this very interesting, and Napolitano, I think, has been really good at spotting trends in advance. How good his sources are on this, you know, those are good sources. Are they right? Well, we don't know. But it certainly is interesting that Hillary is even out there talking about these things, and that Pelosi's calling her president in the middle of this. And the other thing I want to say about this, too, is that trying to remove Trump as a potent force against Biden by launching all these cases at him is a decidedly PR move, because the timing on all these is getting us right into the 23-24 election cycle. Of course, they could have pulled the Mar-a-Lago raid, you know, 2 years earlier. They could have done all these things earlier, right after he got out of the presidency. And, you know, the whole thing about J6, we've gone through that before. You know, this is largely a case of wanting this big thing to happen that they couldn't quite pull off. So they had to make it seem like it. And that's why you see people like Liz Cheney out there in the J6 committee and all that nonsense. And you had a really large scale protest there. But as we found out later through the footage that was released, it was the Capitol Police walking these people through the halls of Congress. And I don't agree with the idea of storming a building or anything of this nature. But what you see really is that the lockdowns, the 2 years before the incident. So, you know, those things that go on, trapping people in their house and then, you know, doing things like shenanigans around the election. And even the earlier protests that were related to George Floyd and all that stuff also had a flavor of this. When you keep people and compress them in a fascist way, then you, when they have something that's going to uncork or unleash them, the thing that you need to do as a body is restore order by assuring them that there's some kind of process in place for them. What they did in this case was they took the people who were the most disaffected and they led them down this kind of road of, you know, committing things that they could, you know, they took even the most innocent people who were just standing around there and put them in jail for 4 years. It's ridiculous. So, and we've seen if you applied the same things in relation to Black Lives Matter and all that kind of stuff, where the leaders took off with all the money and bought themselves homes in the Hollywood Hills, it all just gets forgotten and rubbed out. But yet this is the way that it's actually gone down. Now, what we need to do when we take a look at this is we need to understand that the people who were in charge of things for J6 were trying to, through provocateurs, make that situation happen. So it was a trap, in fact. And so now it's one of the things in their toolbox to try to get Trump with. You know, they tried the Russia collusion thing. It didn't work because it was all a lie. Now, who funded a lot of that was Hillary Clinton. And her campaign came out with a little fine that they got from the Justice Department for doing this. Naughty, naughty. Here's your little fine. No charges, you know, no overstuffed DA prosecutor saying, I've got you in court, you know. No, all she got was a little fine for making things up, you know, and putting intelligence agencies in the middle of that. So, we know that there's an imbalance that's going on here, and the indictment represents a kind of a red line that's been crossed. So, you know, the red line, in my opinion, that really got crossed was when Twitter blocked the New York Post story. Because the New York Post story about Hunter Biden's laptop took place in the fall during the campaign and would have changed the face of the campaign, and the censorship was put into place. So Twitter, in particular, was responsible for that, and Facebook and others. Now, what's interesting, I want to go back to this, and we're going to see how it updates to the situation that we're in. And then I want to go over a few more things from today, and then we're out. How's that sound? Okay, sounds good. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. Great to have you here. So many of you are here with us for our five-year anniversary, Friday and Saturday. We did two issues, Pawgate Part 1 and Part 2, and those episodes are there for you. There's going to be more on Pawgate coming up as well. And I want to say that, the kind of feedback we've got from that is outstanding. So I'm looking forward to coming back with more of those X series episodes with you sort of toward the end of the month. I wanted to walk through some CIA activity around the Trump administration. So immediately the CIA was in the background trying to make sure that he didn't get in even before he won the election. And then once he won, in that period in between him winning and taking office, they tried to come up with things to block him from getting in. And of course, once he was in, they tried to do it. The CIA was behind the Ukraine push. The idea that they could, you know, somehow there was a CIA person who just happened to be listening in to a conversation that Trump was having with Zelensky and was like, oh, he's trying to get Biden. This is so illegal for him to try that. And that turned out to be nothing. They couldn't impeach him on that because it was a fake out. The Russian collusion turned out to be nothing. And then the J6 thing and trying to get him for that, that, you know, was another false impeachment. So what they've realized is they can mobilize our money to go after their political opponents. And they have the press on their side, so they're able to drum it up. But they're coming up empty over and over again because Trump's a pretty savvy operator in the middle of all this. We need to understand that. In 2018, as a result of a lot of this chicanery, Trump revoked ex-CIA director John Brennan's security clearance. That has never happened to a CIA director before. So this was a shot across the bow at the CIA, and it was a major move. Now, I want to give a little context for why this would happen. For example, in the current situation that we're in with Russia, we have these CIA people all over the place calling for regime change in Russia. That's not part of our foreign policy program at all. But now it is under these people. But the CIA is driving that policy. So those are all neocons who think that, you know, they can take on the world, even the nuclear arm world. And they were just wrong. So along that line, ex-CIA chief says, Putin is a dead man walking. Here is why I know he'll be killed to finally end the war in Ukraine. So, you know, this is what we're getting from these ex-CIA directors around Russia. This is the nature of what they're saying. I want to say this in relation to the Central Intelligence Agency, that they've been polluting the well in terms of political conversation in the country since they were invented in 1947, and they've reached now into every area of American life and around the globe. So, you know, we're dealing with their tentacles, you know, one at a time, trying to clean up the media or trying to clean up politics or whatever, but it goes back over and over again to the Central Intelligence Agency piece. Now, when I say that it was the Twitter censoring of the New York Post story of the Hunter Biden laptop and the crimes listed therein that was a line in the sand, that's where we should have, this should have gone into a different, totally different thing. What you got instead was a couple of years later, the Twitter files, you know, which is, it's an effort in the right direction, but this is, that's pretty mild compared to what we should be seeing. So here's how it played out. So let's get a handle on how this the CIA operates. Hunter Biden's story is Russian disinfo, dozens of former intel officials say. More than 50 former intelligence officials signed a letter casting doubt on the provenance of a New York Post story on the former vice president's son. Now, this is how it played out in the 2020 election. And so Biden was able to skate because they were able to censor the story based on the fact that 50 CIA people said, no, it's not. It's a Russian hoax. It's not a real thing that's going on there. And the laptop, you know, it's not what you think it is. All right. So they write a letter, and I just want to quote one little bit on this letter. It's 50 of them, and it's October 19th, 2020. Okay, 2 weeks before the election. We were all individuals who devoted significant portions of our lives to national security. Some of us served as senior positions of policy departments and agencies. Some of us served in senior positions in the intelligence community. It's a lot of directors in here. We are also individuals who see Russia as one of the most nations, as our nation's primary adversary. Okay, now, in there, you're going to find John Brennan and others. This is the guy who Trump revoked his security credentials. James Clapper, who lied to Congress, as we know. So there's a whole Leon Panetta, Mike Hayden, who ran the NSA during the Iraq War. So this, basically, it's a whole list of Gotham City criminals. Now, what's interesting to me about this is they all put their credibility on the line saying this. Now, what happened, as we know, is it turned out that they were incorrect. It wasn't a Russian plant, and that the laptop was, in fact, authentically Hunter Biden's laptop, and that the story was accurate. It should not have been censored, and it would have impacted the campaign dramatically. So that got reported, even on CBS News. They were the ones who started to change the tide on this. 2022, the year the Hunter Biden laptop was finally verified by the media. New York Times, Washington Post, NBC, CNN, CBS took turns reporting on the laptop after rejecting the Biden scandal in 2020. All right, that's the way that it played out. 2 years later, they all had to eat crow and say, you know what? The crimes were real. The laptop was, in fact, real. But in the meantime, all the effects from the 50 people coming out and saying, we're directors, we have the prestige, all that played out. And so everyone thought, oh, the Hunter Biden laptop isn't real. The reason that's important is because the Hunter Biden laptop refers to Joe Biden and the things that he's involved with in helping his son get these crooked deals in China and elsewhere. Now, during the election, there was a lot during the Trump-Biden election in 2020 when President Trump was leading in the polls. The CIA took pains to go out there and try to take him down, saying that, oh, he's going to get us into World War III. I don't trust him with the nuke. Let's call the 25th Amendment. Now, the media championed these efforts. And so we had former CIA director John Brennan takes on Trump and doesn't hold back. And they were like, yeah, let's get that Trump, you know, let's get the CIA to do this. Now, interestingly enough, this is a newspaper calling for an intelligence official to go after a president. It's like driving the deep state. So it's kind of a sick cycle. When we get into that relationship of the Central Intelligence Agency with the media, then we understand the kind of danger that we're in and how it's the CIA that's driving the media points. So when we get to, you know, the kind of clunky on the ground action of like a Bragg or somebody, it is all the result of these chipping away at the rule of law in the United States by the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, this goes back a ways, and on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, let's pause to reflect on the fact that both of these leaders were assassinated within 2 months of each other 55 years ago, and that it was the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI who were the largest, you know, they were the biggest suspects that we had in those crimes. Over the years, we've discovered, in fact, more and more evidence points to those players. And in the case of the assassination of President Kennedy, you know, it's basically a done deal. The Central Intelligence Agency and the aerospace wing combined collectively to do this. And they still withhold the records in relation to the assassination of the United States president by the intelligence agencies. So a great deal of researchers know about it. A lot of the political people, in fact, know about it. And so when you get people who go outside of the margins and try to do things for society, this group that, you know, consists of the deep state, one of their main pieces, the main pawns on the board is the Central Intelligence Agency, because this is what they need to drive the situation, because the Central Intelligence Agency is locked in with finance on one hand, with the media on the other, with foreign policy, with war, with assassination. They are the tentacles of the American deep state. So in understanding the situation, why the Central Intelligence Agency is against Trump, we have to backtrack it over time to really understand what we're talking about, because the Central Intelligence Agency was in lockstep with Obama, in lockstep with W, in lockstep with Clinton, in lockstep with George W. Bush and with Bush Sr. So what's the problem? Well, once you get to Trump, it's a little different, because Trump's support system comes from the maybe the same channels through the deep state, but he doesn't interlock with the deep state. So he's not a part of that CIA machine. He's not a part of that finance wing. He operates as an outsider in that group. And, you know, you might say the idea of a billionaire outsider, how often does that happen? But it does. I think in the case of Trump, there was an independence stance that this American deep state political scene cannot tolerate. And it puts him and his agenda for America in a lot of jeopardy. But more importantly, for us who want to have that open conversation about, you know, the America First policies and that kind of thing versus this destructo Biden policy and the incredible kind of fascism that's associated with it, the fact that they are blocking that conversation and blocking the candidate and hounding the candidate. In fact, they are blocking us and hounding us through this activity, which is why it goes beyond just mere politics. In this case, we're really looking at what they want to do to all of us. And it's exactly why we can't allow this to happen. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show deep tonight here on the Trump indictment and some of the real setup. So we understand the machinery in place here on the intelligence side, driving these legal activities in the political background. We'll take a few of your questions here before we go, and we'll stay on till about 10:30 if that works for you. How are you doing out there?
Oh, it's crazy tonight. There are a lot of trolls or potential trolls that I'm keeping my eye on.
Oh no. Well,
politics always brings that out.
That's what it is.
Okay,
you know it well.
Adam R says it's not about whether you like Trump or not. It's about a system being weaponized to get rid of political opponents.
There's no question, which is why the history is important, because they've done it before. And it doesn't observe any particular side of the aisle. So remember those deep state revolts against the White House that Professor Scott talks about. You get them on Republican and Democrat side. As a matter of fact, what's interesting about the Nixon story is that when Nixon was in there as VP and then later when he gets in as president, the deep state loves him. But he starts to go outside of what they want to do, especially in relation to China and Russia. And then he's about winding down the Vietnam War and things of this nature. And he doesn't want to sign on to an early version of GATT. And GATT is so important to understand in terms of the way our foreign policy just split and bifurcated into two totally different mentalities. But the fact that he doesn't want to do that makes him at odds with the deep state and the Rockefellers and so on. And soon, you know, his efforts behind ratifying alternative energy, trying to get us, you know, because there's things in that period, like the Arab oil crisis, for example, which really showed our dependence on Middle Eastern oil. And so he had looked into alternative versions for this. And a lot of the reporting that I've done about Trump and Nixon later was verified through letters between the two about the depth of their relationship. Well, the other thing that I've put on the record that hasn't, that all the proof for hasn't come out yet, is this idea of what Nixon was trying to do in terms of alternative energy and how that relates to the UFO file. It's actually more important and more pertinent now. We can actually understand the lens of what was going on there, because if you apply the UFO file to a situation like Watergate, then it makes a lot more sense. The Kennedy assassination actually makes a lot more sense when you include it. And it's not to, you know, sort of over-focus on the UFO file, but if we understand the UFO file for how important it is, then it drives so much of this geopolitical activity. So we'd understand everything in a much different way if we understood that look at the exotic technology part. And that's an old piece that goes back before the Nazis. And if you watch this show, it goes a lot further back than that. But this is important because when you talk about things that we understand, you know, we think of like, well, there might be a nuclear exchange or something like that. But the type of weapons and things that they create and that they have in their possession go far, far beyond that. And one thing that's great about Trump in relation to this is he's alluded to it. You know, he's alluded to the types of things that we'll be able to do. So, you know, for me, when I look at it, if you know all the deep state parts in relation to this story, but you don't understand the UFO file part, then you're missing such an important piece that you'll never understand the other sort of 90%. So that is a very vital piece in the middle of all this. So what we do on this show is we try to take you into that in a way that shows its political affiliation, and that shows how it's driving that political system, in fact. So when we look at that and we see some of these clashes that have taken place in the past, we look at the Kennedy clash with the Central Intelligence Agency, largely driven by the fact that the Central Intelligence Agency was running the world and Kennedy wanted that power back under executive control. Kennedy was eliminated for that purpose after a time of them looking at how they could control him. One of the early ways they sought to control him was getting him involved in the invasion of Cuba. And once he found out that they were trying to basically hoist this invasion of a country on him, he fired the Central Intelligence Director. But Dulles, who was standing there with in that picture, was no ordinary CIA director. He controlled this entire apparatus of the deep state. And he and his brother basically were running the show in relation to Operation Paperclip and the whole Nazi collaboration piece of all this. They'd been involved on a level that is still coming to light. So Kennedy, in looking at those players, decided, well, this is the opportunity. And one of those conversations that took place after the Bay of Pigs, where they tried to basically fake Kennedy out into an all-out invasion of Cuba through the CIA, he went and met with Dulles and said, you know, if this was the UK, I'd be the one who has to leave, but this is America and you have to leave. That's a very important understanding. And remember, you know, his dad was ambassador to the UK. So Kennedy understood very well the politics over there and the politics over here. This is the great advantage in the Kennedy presidency. He understands them and he understands how that worldwide network operates. His close relationship with Forrestal also gives him that deeper understanding. Forrestal, the first defense secretary of the United States, huge knowledge of the UFO file. This is important because we have to understand the things that are operating in the background in this conversation. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is the major special report update on the Trump indictment today. I'm trying to give us that real background to show some of the things that were going down today in the background on it and why the Get Trump piece is on and why he cannot be allowed to win the 2024 presidential election, which it looks like he is on the trajectory for, because if they have things like a failing economy, the disastrous foreign policy, and Stepford Biden stumbling around, Trump's numbers have been rising. He's well known as somebody who gave us a great economy. And, you know, America was certainly more respected around the world when he was in office. So whether you think he'd win or not, his chances are quite good by any pollster standards. Right now he's leading. So they're trying to take down the leading opposition candidate for president. That's all we need to know. You know, personality or not, it doesn't matter if this was Bernie Sanders or Trump. There's a reason, though, that it's Trump. Yeah, what do you got?
Shane Walker, is it possible we get COG before a 2024 election?
Yes. The continuity of government piece is important to all this. Remember, COG was called on J6, and they went through the exercise of getting all those Congress people and Pelosi off to a remote location. Also remember the oddity of the fact that when the car showed up for Pence, COG car, like, we'll get you out of here, Mr. Vice President. He said no. So he understood that the COG that Trump was involved with versus traditional COG were different operations. This is important, too, because I pointed this out. I won't go too deep on this part, but it is important to understand. After the election of 2020, Trump did a number of remarkable things, including fire the defense secretary Esper. So this is important because Esper had just replaced the COG commander that August. And the guy who was replaced was relatively young. He was like 53 years old. So he wasn't slated for retirement, is my point. And the guy they put in is Van Herk. Now, Van Herk, I've pointed out, he's the head of NORTHCOM, he's the head of NORAD, and he is the continuity of government commander, combatant commander of the United States if they press the continuity COG button. What's interesting is that ordinarily these guys are very hidden in the background. Nobody knows who they are, or if they know the name maybe, but they're not out there giving press conferences. During the whole Chinese balloon shootdown escapades, and then the UFO shootdowns and the missing debris, by the way, which we still don't get a handle on. Interestingly enough, this guy took front and center, not Stepford Biden, not the defense secretary, this guy. So there's a real dry run for COG there, no question about it. And remember, continuity of government isn't what it used to be. So COG originally created as kind of a nuclear failsafe in case the regular government got decapitated. You'd have this underground thing operating and they could fight the Soviets with it. That's what it was originally created for. In the 80s, it was Liz Cheney's dad and Donald Rumsfeld, who worked with Oliver North and George Bush to create this new version of COG that didn't require a nuclear emergency, just required an emergency. And that also included, you know, gathering up these lists of domestic enemies, you know, and this kind of thing, opposition groups. And the idea was, we'll never have a peace movement again that will throw us off our plans the way the Vietnam peace movement did. So this is part of it. And that became the whole focus of this thing that they called Main Corps, which is a database of dissidents, in fact, of people who had moved against the system. You know, many of the guests on my program would qualify as dissidents under these rules. So it's important to understand the continuity of government groups, how it functions, and how it came up during the end of the Trump administration. Suddenly the media was talking about it. Now, I'd been studying it for years through the work, very obscure work of Professor Scott, and he's writing these books in the 80s, 90s about this very unusual function of government and how it keeps showing up in the middle of all these deep events like Watergate. All their personnel keeps showing up. John Dean, who dimes on Richard Nixon, he's a big COG guy. So when 9/11 actually happens, they activate this 9/11 emergency and COG is set off. And so the same people who'd been working on it in the 1980s, Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, suddenly they get their big chance. You know, I'm going to write the Patriot Act. I'm going to go into the mountain. I'm going to play out COG. So ever since then, we've been living under the September 11th emergency. We still are. And this is part of the problem. So part of the changing of government is to release the 9/11 emergency powers. That would be something that would be crucial and important for any president that gets in 2024. And that could be RFK Jr. That could be President Trump. But whoever it is, it cannot be a Stepford Biden, because the country would never, you know, the country would disintegrate under Stepford Biden for two terms. So it is an important election. I want to point this out too about 2024. A lot of people are cynical about presidential elections, and I understand that. And they'll say, you know, I hear even very smart people talking about, well, you know, if you vote for your alderman or something, you can work out, you know, city rights with your alderman. It's not going to make any difference if you have that corruption at the head of the body politic. You need a totally new president this time. If you want to, after the 2024 election, revert to that state of mind, fine. 2024 is important. You need RFK Jr. on the Democratic side. You need Trump on the other side. And both of them can duke it out, and we can get a reasonable outcome for president for 2024. That's where we're headed. Yeah, what do you got?
Karen Carpenter, what's the difference between COG and emergency powers? And are we seeing slow motion COG being enacted right now?
Well, I do a number of shows on emergency powers. COG is the ultimate emergency power. So the emergency powers operate in cases of like COVID and stuff. When a governor says, oh, I'm not going to act for my legislature anymore, it's an emergency power. I'm ordering you to stay in your house. So those things aren't legal. And what you find is that the people who are operating them over and over again are people whose margin of governance and popularity is going down, down, down. Justin Trudeau, 28%. When the truckers get there and arrive in Canada demanding things and saying, we don't want, you know, this experimental medical program as part of our job, what does he do? He presses the emergency button, roll tanks, you know, because they challenged me, suspend their money and all that, and create a state of emergency. Now, in France, when they wanted to do this whole thing about raising the retirement age, you know, what they got there is fascinating because it's actually lowering it. And what they wanted to do was when you get to a certain point and you can't get things through the legislature and, you know, you get stuck in this whole thing where you are under the gun from the World Economic Forum and they're saying, look, you have to get this done or we're done with you. And here comes your sex scandal or blackmail or whatever. They'll do anything. So what they did there is, you know, they raised the retirement age. Now, he did it on his own without any legislative vote. That's a dictatorial power. But remember, when you go back and you go all the way back to the Nazi party, you're going to find the Enabling Act and the whole thing with the Reichstag fire and all that gives them the ability to consolidate all this power for the Nazis and also to merge the office of chancellor and president under one person, Adolf Hitler. That is such a dangerous precedent. We've seen it over and over again in the situation that we're in. When they get to emergency powers, they can't govern anymore. This is the nature of the problem. So all they can do is come up with an emergency. And cyber emergency is the one I think that they're working on immediately. But you know, the large scale emergency that they're looking at is the UFO threat. There's no question about it. That's the ultimate sort of COG fantasy. And the continuity of government commander, his major role there this past February was to come out and create a precedent for shooting down UFOs. Was it not? That's exactly what happened. And that's the first time that NORAD's been used to shoot anything down ever on the record anyway. what else you got?
Proudhon 100, if Trump is such a threat, why haven't they JFK'd him, a plane crash or something?
Well,
heart attack gun.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to deal with people. And I think part of the problem with the assassination program is it becomes such an obvious program that their discrediting program can actually fuel a number of other things like divisions in society, especially when it comes to Trump. They figure, oh, we can use him as this divisive piece. So they want to do that more. They want to drive the wedge and they want Trump to look like the bad guy in all these different scenarios. So I'm not trying to say here, well, Trump is a saint and these other people are all evil. But what you usually have is a spirited opposition versus, you know, whoever is in power. So Trump got in and everybody, the media and everyone was on the, you know, let's get Trump. And it was different than the opposition between, say, Clinton and Bush. This is different. This is any mention of Trump and you have to peel them off the ceiling. And it means that Trump represents a fundamental threat to their power base in the deep state because he operates in the same corridors of power. And that's not true, you know, say of previous presidents, like a Jimmy Carter didn't operate in those corridors of power. He seemed to struggle at times to find out how he had any power as president. Other guys who thought that they were president, like Reagan, you know, we learned very quickly that they tried to remove him and install Bush immediately. And these were the types of things that the CIA did. Their assassination programs, a lot of CIA people have gone on the record now saying like, oh, that was something, you know, it was a bygone era, whatever. And, you know, we just learned through a series of reports about the attempts by the Central Intelligence Agency, the plans to assassinate Julian Assange. So their assassination program's alive and well. So I wouldn't rule it out in the case of Trump, but I think that they feel that they have such a wedge issue with Trump that they can use it, I would say, you know. So it's a multiple advantages proposition. However, they're also scared to death of him in power. And it's not because they think he'll be a Hitler, because there he was as president for 4 years and, you know, we didn't have any Hitler-style problems. But he didn't operate on their level. He didn't drive, you know, the Russian-Ukraine war. He didn't, you know, get himself involved in these things. He, in fact, reduced tensions in places like North Korea. That's hard. So he wanted us out of Iraq, out of Afghanistan. You know, these were the policies that he created, because Trump at heart is more a businessman and he sees the triumphs of business. He is not a warlord. So all the money and all the, you know, everyone gets something on that military train, but all of the war money is not something that Trump wasn't aligned with the war party in that sense. Yeah, what do you got?
Yeah, he's a deal maker.
Absolutely.
Right. And the better America does, the better he looks, which is what he's really interested in. I have no problem with that.
I think that's really true. A couple of things from the indictment. This is good. Josh Hawley posted this. Alvin Bragg says that the second crime Donald Trump tried to conceal with the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels was suppressing negative information to help his chances of winning the 2016 election. And so they went through this, and inside the indictment, it talked about that he was trying to influence the election. Well, this is the interesting thing, because there is no statute or any law against influencing an election. As a matter of fact, every commercial that you put out there as a political candidate is influencing the election. So a number of expert legal scholars, in looking at the indictment from today, found it beyond absurd, because they didn't find the laws specified as to what the laws he had broken. That's weird in an indictment. Two, the things that they were talking about related to federal matters, and they were operating on a state prosecutorial level. So there's something fishy going on in the middle of this. The case that they have doesn't make any sense, and it's going to get thrown out. So why are they putting all this mobilization behind doing it? That is something which we need to figure out on our level. And it seems to me that the project is Project Overwhelm, that they want to overwhelm Trump so that he can't get a shot at taking office. And what's interesting is it runs deep, because Stepford Biden, when he was blathering into the microphone the other day, said, "We'll do anything we can to stop him, you know, from taking office. We'll block him from taking office." You know, I mean, if people vote for him, you can't.
Right, that would be illegal.
Right. So this is what they don't get. And Trump, I think, with that visit to the DA today, also saw the seriousness of what's going on here. And he's been under that cloud, but I think they've been intensifying it. And he's seeing it as a real, you know, kind of they die or he dies kind of situation. And it's a fight to the death between these forces. That's the way that they've made it, because they've gone into this insanity level. And they're breaking all of the traditional norms in American politics in order to do it, including the fact of trying to prosecute a president on nothing evidence. Now, in cases where they had evidence against certain presidents, and that goes basically for all of them, they ignored them or created some kind of a legal deal, because what generally tends to happen is, you know, there's an assumption inside there that it's good for the country if they don't do these things. So even in the prosecution of Nixon, where they had, even though the CIA had created the scenario, they had him, you know, trying to do the cover-up. So legally, they had a chance to do it. And that's when Ford comes in and risks his own presidency and says, I'm pardoning him for any action, not just Watergate, but for anything that he did as president. So, you know, there's something deep in the way that that deal went down and how it created that precedent. But what we have to understand is, when you look at Trump, you know, what we're talking about is they're talking about hush money payments to someone he was having an affair with, you know, that does not rise to the level of the charges. And usually these things are settled as misdemeanors. If it comes into, you know, did this come up in relation to an election? So they are moving this into its impossible stance, which is they just want to prosecute him at any cost. And they came up with this case, and, you know, they kept promising in the weeks leading up to it, oh, he must have something big. You know, you'd have to see these CNN analysts like, don't take it for granted. It's not that stupid Stormy Daniels case. They're working on something major, you know. And then he comes out, you know, and stuffed into his suit and blathers on there about nothing. He doesn't have anything. And he's like, no one's above the law, you know. Yeah, but you still have to have a case. And, you know, you also can't target people politically because you're a Democrat and you ran on the idea that you would get Trump. And here you are. And he knew that when he got in there. As a matter of fact, they presented the case to him and he made this big statement that there's nothing in this case that you can prosecute Trump over. So his change and the whole pageant of the nonsense from today represents a shift in the deep state thinking. And I think it's going into a very bad place because they don't know how else they can get rid of Trump except through this circus. They figure if we can tie him up, you know, if he gets back in, he can thwart our plans. And now especially so that he has the knowledge of the presidency behind him. That, I think, is the danger that they're facing. And Trump is defiant in the middle of all of it. He is not giving an inch. And I think the way that he's outmaneuvered them bothers them. And that's why I think the scenario with Clinton, the potential for the scenario with Clinton is possible, that they could be moving her into position as VP and they want her to continue, you know, the idiotic battle against Russia and they, you know, the consolidation of the globe. They figure President Hillary Clinton could do that, you know, and the Trump is their major block in the middle of all this. Yes.
Joseph is asking, he said it's the weirdness of the indictment that should bother everyone.
It is. It's a very weird indictment. And the legal experts who went after it from Napolitano, but even on the left, they were like, this is entirely underwhelming. We already know this stuff and it failed. And the federal prosecutors didn't do it. And neither did Bragg last time. So why are they running through this scenario again? Some people on that side seem to think, well, we have a better chance, you know, if we are in a situation of prosecuting Trump based on the documents. Although that's not a case in my opinion either, but there's something weird about the classified documents case because first of all, that also shattered protocol by raiding a ex-president. They hadn't done that before, even in cases of criminality or, you know, Clinton or Nixon or anybody. Or even with whatever scandal came up, they never raided any president ever. So there's a reason why they did this, and they went so bananas that they were looking through Melania's clothing. That's odd too. And I think it gives us some idea of what this is that we may be looking for. And I submit that the raids and the classified documents are somehow associated with this advanced technology piece, and that is what a lot of this is about. And that's where a lot of the kind of levers of power operate around. The other thing that's odd about the document thing is suddenly everybody had these stolen documents. And Biden, of course, we know, had a bunch of them in his garage in Delaware. And, you know, Hunter rented the house. I mean, this runs deep. This runs really deep. Mike Pence had them. I mean, you know, there's something strange about the story of the classified documents and then the jumping to a special prosecutor. And then that special prosecutor, he says, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the document case and I'm going to roll it in kind of a butterball. And, you know, I'm going to put J6 in with it. So I've got this kind of, you know, little factory where I can make anything, any crime that I want by combining all these things. It's really weird. Then you have the weird Georgia case, which is about a conversation that he had, which everybody knows because the call was leaked immediately. And it was to Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State in Georgia. And it was Trump saying, hey, there's been a lot of voting shenanigans. You know, can you case those precincts again and come up with more votes on our side? Because we know that they're there. That was the nature of the call. There were lawyers on the call for the Trump people. You know, they would have, if there were red flags in the call, they would have noticed it. But they have a weird thing in Atlanta trying to prosecute Trump there as well. So they're just doubling down in these weird situations. So you know, let's see if we've got this straight. You've got the Manhattan DA Bragg bringing these Stormy Daniels nothing charges that nobody cares about. And Michael Cohen is the only witness that he has, and he's the worst, you know, the biggest liar, proven perjurer. So you don't have a case. As a matter of fact, as soon as they submit that case on the Trump side, it's going to get thrown out. So why all the pageantry? Why bringing him to New York and all this? I mean, it's very, very unusual. The Georgia case I just mentioned, they had the jury woman come out, and she was started to, one of the lead jurors in the case started to give these very freaky interviews to the media. And, you know, she had this whole anti-Trump thing going on. So that case is already going to get thrown out, in my opinion, eventually. I'm not a legal expert, but I can give you my educated opinion on that. The next piece is this Smith special prosecutor piece. And that is the one where they're trying to make a little, you know, kind of paste a little here and paste a little there and put this crime together. And that's the whole weirdo J6 thing, which, again, what are you actually going to do with Trump in relation to J6, which happened a number of years ago and was related to what? You know, you locking down people in the first place. And then they had, what, 100 FBI provocateurs in the crowd leading this situation? If anything, you're going to bust the FBI if you look into that deep enough. So let's get real, you know. So what else have you got against Trump? I mean, you don't have anything legitimate. So the classified docs, I guess, is where you can hang your hat on. And it's interesting because in the middle of all this, you've seen kind of a push-pull with the deep state while they've been running this phony brag thing. Washington Post is trying to gin up this thing, saying like, oh, we just got a big leak about those classified docs and obstruction of justice, you know. There's also a problem with the federal cases, as we know, because if Trump becomes president, after all, he can pardon himself, as unseemly as that may seem. So that 2024 election is going to be so important, and this is the setup for it, regardless if you're pro-Trump or pro-anyone, you're going to be looking at a very unusual case, yes.
Rehoboth Farm. See, the point of indicting him on absolutely nothing is part of the ritual of it. They want to show us that they can bring Trump, a rich and powerful person, down with nothing of substance. They want to wave an idiot like Bragg with a total BS case at us. If you don't think they can rig it, you haven't been paying attention. It's a challenge. They want to provoke a confrontation.
I think that there's a lot of provoking, and I think they are hoping for violent outcomes. I still think that the piece around the classified documents runs deeper than it would appear on the surface. It relates to something that Trump knows from inside the government that he took with him. And it seems to me it set off a weird search for something similar among other people. And that somehow, you know, it seemed ridiculous on its face to prosecute Trump for something every president, after all, has done, which is bring classified documents home. But in the case of Biden and stuff, proving that he did it as vice president, they've already done that. So the FBI, you know, went through this whole thing. But was that kind of a charade to get us on the point of thinking, well, you know, we don't really need that part? Was the whole thing about getting Trump and the classified documents a way to threaten him to give it back? And, is the thing he's giving back relating to a major secret inside the government relating to their deep state program of control activity? To me, that's the advanced technology piece associated with the UFO file. Seems obvious to me that that's where, you know, you want to talk about disclosure, you know, forget about Gaia TV or whatever. Watch what's unfolding with the classified document case. That's where the action is. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. So great to be with you here under unusual circumstances with the Trump indictment and just absolutely abhorrent behavior on the part of the political groups involved with this, which is a false prosecution and just something that they're prosecuting their political enemies, in this case, the leading political candidate of the opposition party. You know, that makes America a banana republic. And it reminds me, as we go back in time and look at the Kennedy case, because in one of those off-the-record speeches that the CIA director, former CIA director Dulles, when he got on to run the Warren Commission, which was the big whitewash after Kennedy's assassination, he said, you know, Americans have to be reassured that America is not a banana republic, because he knew that he'd been running banana republics after all. And banana republic runs, you know, if somebody doesn't operate the way that the CIA wants them to and these business interests, they assassinate them. And, you know, it happens with all kinds of people back there, Arbenz, Lumumba, and, you know, in Iran, Mossadegh. I mean, we did it. That's what the CIA did. And they just took that apparatus and they turned it inward on America. So that was the first kind of major loss of innocence, you could say, in our entire history. And that's why they still don't let that out. And I've pointed out before that inside those records, and it's, you know, something that Judge Napolitano said in about his conversation with President Trump, that he was shocked that Trump didn't release them. And Trump said to him, you don't understand. You do not understand what's in those records. So there is something very powerful in the JFK records after all. And I believe it's something left there as a kind of booby trap, as a dead man's switch back there by Robert Kennedy, that if they went to eliminate it, if they went to whitewash that file, that it would set off some mechanism. So it's left in there, which means they'll never release it. It's a stealth archive in the classic X series way. Quick thing about presidents and such, and we know that we need to set a precedent here ourselves, which is they cannot be allowed, the deep state in this case, to take a president away from us again. So they did this in the case of John F. Kennedy, and the media said to everyone who questioned it, shut up. So that's the thing that has sort of steadily destroyed the country over time. And it's a situation that can be reversed, but we have to be able to see through the media telling people not to look at these things and the kind of co-opting of the narrative around them. Like, oh, you know, we'll give you a different phony CIA conspiracy around this thing instead of the real deal. In Kennedy's case, his major affront to the Central Intelligence Agency was that he wanted to bring forward an entirely different freedom foreign policy for the world. And the Central Intelligence Agency said, why? Why make those groups and those countries equal with us? Because we have all these advantages right now. But Kennedy was very forward-looking, and he was saying, you know, eventually, even in these Central American republics and stuff, it's going to blow back on us. So let's do this, you know, let's start to open this situation up. Let's have a freedom policy. And also, I think the nature of the Kennedys being part of the very top tier financially in all these families, that I think that they were saying, look, you know, we need to balance the situation out. We need to be about freedom, progress in the 1960s, you know, and America needs to be a beacon of that. And it can't be just, you know, the CIA doing these things in the background. The other thing that's important to note when we look at it historically is that President Kennedy, when he got into office, as much as he knew from his dad and from being a senator and from being all around the world and his dad being ambassador to the UK and all that, when he got into office as president, his closest aides said he could not believe the amount of power the Central Intelligence Agency wielded. And that was back in 1960. So where are we now? Where are we now? Some, you know, 63 years later, there's been nothing to slow down that gravy train. And if anything, they've added all these weird apparatus like Homeland Security. And by the way, Homeland Security has 250,000 employees. That's the problem. So the security state increases and increases. So there needs to be a political process, because the political process and the judiciary, so the voting system and the judiciary, are the places where we can get justice on this. And you need the executive branch in line with that, which is why we need the right president for 2024, which is why I think that election is so important. And Trump, carrying in a lot of the policies that he did during his presidency, kept us a lot closer to where we need to be constitutionally with the country. Can we get closer? You know, I think if you had an RFK candidacy, RFK Jr. candidacy on one side, because remember, the Democrats go after RFK Jr., even though he's from the leading family in politics on the Democratic side, they go after him unhinged. RFK Jr.'s anti-vaccine group kicked off Instagram and Facebook. And if you read this article on AP, they celebrate it. They're like, all right, they finally got rid of that SOB. But what is he doing? He's challenging the pharmaceutical companies. And how important was that before the pandemic and during the pandemic and after? So he's really been on the front line with a lot of this. So I think what we're looking at for 2024 is the importance of having Bobby Kennedy on the Democratic side and Trump on the Republican edge. Yes.
Caritas Taro, Sacrifice of the King, a debauched Holy Week spectacle, and Gene Splice, Trump's resurrection, symbolic for Holy Week. Joseph said the whole thing happening during Western Holy Week is not accidental. Jimmy Lyle Canamer says, DJ, won't this be the best PR for Trump being set up as a living martyr? And Bobo the Clown says, are we witnessing a possible phoenix rising in regards to Trump?
Wow, yeah. Excuse me. The way I look at that is it's all true. And I think there's a lot of things they'd like to do with Trump against him that they can't. Also, I think the symbology of MLK's assassination, well, they announced the indictment on the anniversary of Reagan's assassination attempt. That's weird. By John Hinckley Jr. Then we have the other piece, which is today, and that's Martin Luther King's anniversary. And remember, King was assassinated only 2 months before RFK was assassinated. So there's a kind of a bloody history there on the leadership side. So there is, you know, they do operate with these dates and they do put them together in that symbolic fashion. I'll try not to overinterpret, but I do think it's unusual, the timing around this, especially since they don't seem to have a case. So I would say you're on the right track with that. And I'd also say that they've gone down this road before. Now, in the background, something related to what I've been watching is Congress prepares as UFO hearings for UFO hearings as frustrations escalate among politicians. The frustrations are that they want more money for the UFO Defense Office, UFO DOE. And they haven't been granted that function yet, but they have the UFO office set up. That is Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York with all of her strange aerospace and Nexium ties. She also ran for president in 2020, but she's been working with Senator Rubio in Florida, a Republican, and between the two of them, they did the unusual thing of attaching this UFO Defense Office to the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a $1 trillion boondoggle that both parties sign on to at the end of every year. But because of their positions on the intelligence committees, they were able to hold up the entire passing of the bill until you put the UFO Defense Office arrow on it. And this is significant because that kind of pressure that can be applied, if all those people aren't getting their money, then they're like, all right, you know, we'll take this arrow thing in this way. Now think about President Trump and his approach on the UFO piece. That is really the Space Force. So if you want to start looking at the, you know, the forest through the trees, then you're starting to get a bigger picture. Look to the aerospace side and the advances there. Then you'll understand SpaceX and Twitter as well. So 2024 is a disclosure election. There's no doubt in my mind. They've already went through a small demonstration of this by shooting down those things that disappeared. And the whole Chinese balloon scenario and all that, I'm not buying it. Look for 2024 as this kind of false disclosure scenario. And these forces are in pretty good positions, I think, to pull it off. Yeah, what do you got?
Transcend Life says, even the Banana Republics are laughing at us. Zombie and Survival Gaming says, the world is in tatters and it's all about distractions. Maui Mixer says, but what are they really distracting us from? CBDC? And Simone Nyman says, feels like a distraction for them to introduce more of the Great Reset behind the scenes.
Yes. Oh, you guys are right on it. I mean, the thing is, the central bank digital currency is something they think they can bring in with the Biden administration. There's no question. And, you know, that is really the consolidation of the biometric digital system, giving us that digital currency where they can shut your money off or not. We've done a number of shows on it. We've done shows with Catherine Austin Fitz on it. I think what's happening here, what's going on here, is they need to clear their opposition for 2024 because they need to make the decision, are they going to run Stepford Biden or do they need somebody else to step in? Because if it's Stepford Biden against this Trump machine, they know that without extreme fraud measures, they can't win. And they don't want to resort to that. It's harder. You're going to see a lot of it anyway, but it's much harder without the COVID part to resort to what they did in 2020. So they're coming up to a choice here, which is why you're seeing Hillary Clinton sitting there being called Madam President or whatever by Nancy Pelosi. For me, when you look at some of these factors that are going on, the idea of what Napolitano said about Hillary Clinton behind the scenes driving the prosecution of Trump and the whole New York thing, you know, it's just illogical enough. You know, it's enough of an impulse move by the Clintons to try to say we can be the point people for 2024 and we can take Trump down in New York City, that there's a group inside that deep state that is split on this. The other people want to just go for Trump through these other means. But there's a group there who did the whole pageantry, the embarrassing pageantry of that terrible case they rolled out today. But, you know, they show just how dangerous that they are because they sacrificed all the president's precedents for a nothing case. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Hillary Clinton was behind that activity. And I think it's interesting that Napolitano raised it. Let's see if he's right. Okay, we'll take two more questions and then we'll wrap up our special report here on the Trump indictments. I want to remind everyone to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our free newsletter that keeps us in touch around the incredible censorship that we've been seeing out there, just off the charts. And, you know, they've tried to really keep the message of the things that we're doing out of their algorithm and everything. But the best way for us to get around all that, and I love the social media networks, I'll use them as long as we can. But the best way to get around all that, of course, is the newsletter. So make sure that you're signed up for the newsletter. And, you know, you get it once a week. It'll let you know the incredible and, I mean, phenomenal interviews that we have coming up for you. Surprises galore for April and May. And, of course, the X-Series episode, we just celebrated the fifth-year anniversary with a big two-parter, Pawgate, all about the Atlantis Hall of Records mystery and something that we brought forward here for the first time. And I think that'll be a historical, archaeological report as we go forward here. And those two episodes are up there for free for you. What else is coming up? Documentaries, events, everything's in that newsletter. So make sure that you stand up and take part and stand up and be noticed and get behind our efforts. Subscribe to the program. And you can do all of that at darkjournalist.com. The only other thing I want to mention is that we will be coming back. The X series will be coming back at the end of April. And we're going to be doing some special reports and interviews. In the meantime, Miss Olivia will take the final two.
Bruce Wayne, federal judges can throw out the case. Does DJ think that will happen?
All the legal experts that I heard talking about it suggested that any higher court, when they hear it, will throw it out. So it's not a case that's going to be able to prosecute Trump. The case itself is so loose and it's so shabby that it's hard to say on the face of it what the prosecution represents, because it doesn't seem to represent a winning legal case. That's for damn sure. So what is it? I guess we need to discover what the nature of the beast is on this. But so I would say that's a yes. Any higher court will throw it out. And, you know, the Trump administration is getting tons of advice, even from the likes of like Alan Dershowitz and people like that, saying, you know, Jonathan Turley, who's hardly a fan of Trump. And they're saying, look, this is a Frankenstein case. This weird Manhattan DA went off and created this on his own. My God, even Jeb Bush was against it. Maybe that shows a split in that deep state. There's some weird group that wants this New York prosecution. And anything up the ladder, I think, will throw the case out. But it's extremely dangerous nonetheless. Yes.
John Howard, listening to Trump, he is weary. I can hear it in his voice. It's later than it seems. And 1968 Camaro SS says, Trump or any individual cannot save us. We need to save the U.S. Doing nothing makes us complicit with the destruction we are witnessing.
Well, yeah,
this is the power of leadership.
Yeah, I think people are doing things. So the whole idea of that we're not doing something, there's all kinds of things that are going on. The protests that took place, you know, all the analysis around it, this show. I mean, there are things that are going on in relation to it. I hardly think people are doing nothing. But doing it properly is intelligent, you know, and working through the judiciary, through the voting process. It's very important to do it the right way while these things function. There's all kinds of tools that are available to us to do battle with this, including exposing it. Exposing it's the best tool that we have in the toolbox. But I think in terms of leadership, look, the presidency is very important. I submit that people who say the presidents don't matter or whatever are wrong. And from my own study of the presidency, it is the most important office that we have. And so many things can flow from it. And also the position that it operates in can be an enormous sway over the minds of the American public, and that ricochets around the world. So if you get someone in there who celebrates the Constitution and who either on the right or the left, whether it's RFK Jr. or Trump, then the country and the world is going to a totally different place, as opposed to if you get a psychopath like Stepford Biden in there and the whole weird committee behind the scenes that's running him, which is largely, you know, again, connected to this deep state CIA apparatus. So it makes a huge difference. 2024, like I said, if you want to go back after 2024 to thinking the old way, fine. But 2024 is important. There's no doubt about it. And we need to get the right president in that election, which is why I think it's important to work for one of the other of these major candidates, unless somebody else comes up who's worth something. A lot of the people who came up, like DeSantis and things like that, and obviously DeSantis did a pretty good job in Florida with some of these policies. However, there's weird money crisscross behind DeSantis, more on the Bush side, and that gets us back into the establishment Republican side. We don't want that, you know, the brakes on that one. And, you know, the other bozos that have announced, like Nikki Haley and Asa Hutchinson, the corrupt ex-governor of Arkansas, you know, no, there's no clear candidate. The only people that I think who could really turn this around, you know, the aircraft carrier of America around, is a second term of President Trump, or if RFK Jr., even though they operate with different policies, they both understand the danger of the CIA and they both are deeply committed to the Constitution. That's all we need to know. We don't even need to know what party they're from. So that's what we need to work for. And if RFK Jr. is running against Biden, which I know that he is, and he he also has done everything but done the actual announcement publicly. But we need to get behind that effort of RFK defeating Biden, because in some weird way, both the Trump forces and the RFK Jr. forces have one main goal, which is they need to take down the Stepford Biden presidency, because that is right now the seat of corruption and it's driving all this other activity. And if both of those forces, if we can get behind both those forces taking down Biden, then we have a much, you know, then it's our game for 2024. Yes. Final question, Miss Olivia.
Karen Carpenter, is there a repeat or echo of the 1968 election and unrest in the works?
It feels a lot like 1968 in terms of the distress in the country. Look, there was a gigantic split, an organic split in the country over the Vietnam War. And you had people burning draft cards and things, and you had the CIA operating behind the scenes. So we've seen how people would get demonized too for opposing the war and blackballed and all these types of things. So we know how this picture runs, etc. What they did in 1968 was they figured out early who they couldn't afford to have in there. And once Bobby Kennedy said, "I'm running against the sacred cow of LBJ," LBJ got out, which is extraordinary, because there's no president in history that wouldn't run for a second term. And, you know, LBJ got in because Kennedy was assassinated. Some say that was the plan all along. But in any case, you know, that first election wasn't his. It was really the legacy of John F. Kennedy. So here he had a chance to run, and his poll numbers were terrible because of the war. But nonetheless, you know, people and campaigns and all the rest of it. What was going on in the background there was LBJ knew, look, I was the recipient of one Kennedy being assassinated, and he knew where all the levers were. And, you know, there's a very good case to say he was directly involved, but he knew that he couldn't be the beneficiary of two Kennedy assassinations, and he got out. And 5 days after he removed himself as a contestant in the presidential election, MLK gets assassinated. But what's interesting and what came out later is that MLK was going to throw his support behind Bobby Kennedy. They didn't want him out there. And then Bobby Kennedy getting assassinated, he's on his way to becoming the Democratic nominee. He's blown away the opposition, even though he came into it very late and decided late. So, you know, in 1967, he said, "I'm not going to challenge the party, sitting party president, LBJ." But he changed his mind when he started to see how weak LBJ was going into that election and said, "I can do this. I can turn the country around. I can end the Vietnam War, and I can do all these things." And I think it's significant because the legacy, you know, you don't want to see just RFK's son compared to RFK. I mean, RFK Jr., Bobby, he's done a lot on his own, and he's had a very complete career fighting for these issues already. But I think that it's important that someone of his integrity wants to run and straighten things out here. And he already has the ire of the media and the DNC. And the DNC has already made moves to make sure that he doesn't get any traction by changing the New Hampshire primary for the first time. That's also a first. So I consider that first with prosecuting Trump as two firsts that are, like, you know, showing us this kind of upside down world and showing us how backwards things are becoming, because the firsts that we're seeing aren't the good kind. You know, we're seeing the kind of fascist run, just like the COVID thing. It was not a good first. These are the wrong types of benchmarks in our society. But what we can do with RFK is he does have the position of investigating the pharmaceutical companies, and he, you know, he has the moral high ground on that. Interestingly enough, he would do very well in a general election. I have no questions about it. It's the Democratic primary and the jury rigging of that system for Stepford Biden, so that South Carolina is first. Remember, the first time that Biden ran in 2020, during the primary, he got almost nothing. I think he got like 5% of the vote in New Hampshire. They couldn't stand him. So we know if they keep the schedule in place that Bobby Kennedy will most likely beat him if he runs a good campaign in New Hampshire. And that'll send ripples through the entire situation. So there's a lot there, I think, for us to work with. And I think RFK Jr. should be the Democratic nominee. And we should go into 2024 with RFK Jr. on one side and Trump on the other. And I think it would make one hell of a important race for America. The other thing that Stepford Biden did is he eliminated with the DNC any possibility of debates with early candidates. So let's say RFK Jr. announced and some other people announced, well, there's not going to be any debates because Stepford Biden, you know, can't compete in that arena. I just stand there and, you know, lose his focus and start talking about the 1930s or something. So, you know, they know what to do and how to jury rig this. And that's what I think is driving RFK, because I think he's saying this is too corrupt. You know, I'm going to step in. So this could be very exciting. So fingers crossed, all of this kind of insanity that we're seeing, with, you know, the unbelievable precedent breaking psychosis of arresting President Trump, the indictment, all the criminal corrupt trash around this whole thing. The whole thing can get cleaned up with a very strong 2024 election. That would be a fantastic outcome. And with that, Miss Olivia,
okay,
you're up.
I have a lot of super chatters to thank. Boba the Clown, Bill Mayo, Pepe Le Pew Pew, Sun Hero, Erica Swenson Elliott, UFO Hunters, Polaris 23, BNB, Wolfgang McCarthy, Dave Bradenton, Jennifer Walters, Jim Sarge 3ID, MJ McCarthy, Jimmy Lyle Kenimer, LSJ, The Weed in Your Garden, Calvin Center, Jen Passavant, Doreen Hewitt, Godstudio.net, Kay Grace, Warlock, Mike D, Johnny Ricardo Bown, Mad Max, Talcott Phillips, GDNPB, and Mindy Drake. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Unbelievable. Wow, we really appreciate your support. It means all the world to us and makes all the difference so we can deliver these reports to you and to all our supporters and subscribers. Thank you for keeping us going and doing this important work. We will be back with you next week, unless the barring some special reports coming up. We have some very exciting shows coming up for you on the X series as well. I want to remind you again, if you're new here, especially go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter and it's going to keep us in touch. I'll do a couple of shout outs here on the way out. Scarlet Fire, Wayne Peak, Jay Fennick. Hey, Olivia Wings Girl, how do you do it? How does she do it? Najat? Yes. Wow. Well, you're watching things over there. I'm sure you're watching them. Joan Q Public, Golden Girl? Yes. Traveling, Riverside Blues, Jennifer Walters, Karen Carpenter? Excellent. Hair-raising day? Yes. Fubar Fighter? I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Adam R. There he is. Great show. Nice chatting with everyone. Fantastic ideas from amazing. Remember, we just did the 5-year anniversary two-parter on Pawgate. I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it yet, do watch it because it's a breakthrough coming down the pike. Oh, the helicopters were wild today. Yes, right over the courthouse. I can imagine. Wow. Was it tempting to be right there on the ground? You bet. You bet it was. Corey Anderson, thank you. Appreciate it very much. Daryl Roberts, great show, guys. Good night, everyone. Corey Anderson, Steiner to God. Love these special broadcasts. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. We will be back with you next week and have a fantastic evening. Even though we're under the shadow of this ridiculous kangaroo court, Nazi court style indictment against President Trump, the more we expose it, and you know, it shows very much that they don't have anything going on, and it's a huge embarrassment for those people. But we'll keep an eye on their dangerous moves, and we'll salute people like Marjorie Greene, who very bravely went out there and, you know, did some fantastic.
Man, she is bold.
she had the bullhorn and she was calling out the mayor. That's what you want to do. And she did it all in style. You know, you want to do that. Love you, Ideas Room Soul Friends. Nicely done. Thank you, DJ and lovely Miss Olivia. Nazis with the black lawyer. I'm not following you there, but let's see. Karen Carpenter. Seriously love this show, Joe Gallo. Thank you very much. Number one. Be prepared. Be prepared. I like that. Yeah, well, we need that preparedness now. This is going to be a very informed political time. So, you know, we're going to need to kind of be on our best game, shall we say.
Yeah, and like, let's not forget this week is Easter, you know, and, yeah. And, you know, this is an opportunity. I think if anything, this is a distraction from our relationship with Christ. So like, you know, true. It's time to tune back in and remember the blessings that are there and the power that is there for us, the guidance, the support, the love.
Wow. Is that really true? it's going to be a fantastic Easter weekend coming up regardless. And if anything, you know, these people are overplaying their hands. And so maybe we can see some of those cards going forward. Remember the UFO file in all of this. It's going to come up. And the emergency powers piece is going to be a huge crisscross on this. We will see you all next week and have a fantastic evening, everyone. And, you know, it says end broadcast after all, but it never really
ends.
And never let it be forgot that once there was a Camelot. Have a great night, everyone.
God bless.